This episode is sponsored by Celestron, manufacturer of high-quality telescopes and an industry leader in developing exciting optical products with revolutionary technologies.
I'm Kelly Beatty of Sky and Telescope magazine, and tonight we're going on a tour of the stars and planets that you'll see overhead during July. This month, we'll take the measure of Earth's orbit, track down the inner planets, and take a poke at a celestial scorpion. So grab your curiosity and come along on this month's Sky Tour. Hey, it's summertime, at least here in the Northern Hemisphere. Long, warm days and short, warm nights. You'd be surprised how many people think it's hotter now because Earth is closer to the sun. Nope, that's not it. In fact, on July 5th, our little planet will be its farthest away, just over 94.5 million miles, not the average of 93 million. Nope, the reason it's hot right now is that the Northern Hemisphere is tipped toward the sun, and that means Earth's bottom half is tipped away from the sun. So right now, it's midwinter in Australia. True darkness is fleeting in summertime, especially at higher latitudes. Here in the Boston area, for example, the last bit of twilight lingers in the west until about 10:30, leaving less than 5 hours of complete darkness to revel in the star-spangled night before dawn begins to creep up in the east. At more southerly latitudes, you get a bit more nighttime, but not much. So let's make the most of the darkness we have, and to do that, we'll need to know the moon's whereabouts this month. The last quarter moon comes on July 1st, and new moon follows on the 9th. Soon thereafter, the lunar crescent will edge up higher and fatter in the western sky after sunset. So your darkest evenings for stargazing are during the first half of July. First quarter moon occurs on the 17th, and July's full buck moon follows on the night of the 23rd. It's traditionally called that by Native Americans because this time of year is when buck deer start to sprout a new set of antlers from their foreheads. And because thunderstorms are common in summer months, this is also called the full thunder moon. After that, the moon moves into the pre-dawn sky with a second iteration of last quarter on the 31st. Two of the sun's inner planets are doing a little dance over in the west after sunset this month. To spot them, you'll need to find a vantage point with an unobstructed view in that direction. You can start looking almost as soon as sundown. Look just to the upper left of the sunset point for Venus. A half hour after the sun disappears, Venus is above the western horizon by the width of your clenched fist held at arm's length. This planet is quite bright, but its dazzle is diminished somewhat due to the twilight around it. Now, if you're looking in early July, a second and much dimmer planet is lurking just to the upper left of Venus. That's Mars, making its final appearance in a performance that's gone on every evening since last summer. You'll have to look carefully, waiting until the sky gets a little darker, because Mars is just 1% as bright as Venus. Now look, if you bring along binoculars and sneak a peek that way, your secret is safe with me. Mars nudges a little closer to Venus each night. On the evening of the 11th, they'll be joined by a razor-thin crescent moon a bit to their right. That sliver will be a challenge to spot if your sky isn't really clear and free of haze. And the next night, on the 12th, the two planets will be just a half degree apart, with a slightly more obvious crescent moon to their upper left and the star Regulus a little farther still to the left. After that, Venus stays put after sunset, more or less, while Mars continues to lose altitude. You'll likely lose sight of it well before month's end, and then it's adios until late this year, when the red planet slowly rises into the twilight before dawn. Speaking of morning twilight, if you happen to be up 30 to 45 minutes before sunrise, look low in the east to glimpse the fast-moving innermost planet, Mercury. Your best chance to spot it will be around the 9th or 10th, and if you're up that early, swing your gaze to the opposite horizon to spot Jupiter, which is pretty bright, and dimmer Saturn to its lower right. It's time for some stargazing. After evening twilight fades, swing your gaze to the left from the sunset point, well past Venus, Mars, and Regulus, until you find a decently bright star about 2 fists high in the southwest. That's Spica, or sometimes called Spica, the main star in the constellation Virgo. She's lying sideways in the sky, with her head toward the right and her legs toward left. Spica is Latin for ear of grain, and Virgo is often depicted holding stalks of grain in her hand. High above Virgo is dazzling Arcturus, the alpha star for the kite-shaped constellation Bootes, meaning herdsman or plowman. Arcturus, which marks the kite's tail, is the 4th brightest star in the nighttime sky. That's mostly because it's relatively close by, only 37 light-years away. Arcturus means guardian of the bear, so called because it's not far from Ursa Major, the big bear, farther north. Now return to Spica and keep scanning to the left until you're facing south, and you'll encounter another star that's about the same brightness as Spica. That's Antares, the brightest star in the constellation Scorpius. This star's reddish hue is strikingly similar to that of Mars, and that resemblance gives the star its name. Antares means, literally, rival of Aries, which is the Greek name for Mars. Antares seems to have an even deeper hue because we usually see it low in the sky where the atmosphere reddens it, just as the dense air low down reddens the setting sun. Compare the colors of Antares and Spica, which is an icy white. Can you see the difference? They're different colors because the surface of Spica is close to 40,000 degrees Fahrenheit. That's more than 3 times hotter than Antares, or our sun for that matter. A sizzling summertime star, for sure. Perhaps more than in any other constellation, the stars of Scorpius really do look like their namesake. Let's trace out its shape, and here's where having a clear southern view becomes important. Antares is the heart of our Scorpion, and close by, to its upper right and lower left, are 2 medium-bright stars representing its body. Less than 1 fist to the upper right of Antares are 3 stars marking the head. To their right are the stars of Libra, the balance scales. But in ancient times, these were perceived as the critter's claws. We talked about Libra quite a bit last month, remember? Trailing from Antares to the lower left is a curving string of stars that form the Scorpion's tail. They arc down and then turn upward, ending in a close-spaced pair of stars at the stinger end. These are sometimes called the cat's eyes by amateur astronomers. The farther south you live in North America or Europe, the easier it is to see the whole tail and stinger. Scorpius also harbors one of the few star clusters that can be easily seen without binoculars or a telescope. It's just to the upper left of the stinger, or the cat's eyes, spaced by about the width of your 3 middle fingers together. This star cluster is the 7th entry in a catalog created by 18th century French astronomer Charles Messier, so it's usually called Messier 7 or M7. But the ancient Greek astronomer Claudius Ptolemy had cataloged it 1600 years before Messier did. He described it as a cloudy star behind the sting of the Scorpion, so it's sometimes known as Ptolemy's cluster. You might have trouble seeing M7 if your skies are awash with light pollution or summer haze, but binoculars should show it with ease and resolve it into a swarm of individual stars. Look to the upper left of M7, or maybe it's easier to look 3 fists to the left of Antares. This puts you in the constellation Sagittarius, the Archer. Most sky watchers don't see someone slinging arrows here. Instead, look for a grouping of medium-bright stars about the size of your clenched fist that trace out the shape of a teapot. The best time for seeing this is around midnight when the teapot is due south and highest in the sky. It's tipped toward the right as if pouring into the tail of Scorpius, with its spout at lower right and its handle at upper left. Now, just above the teapot's handle and a bit to the left are 3 stars in a flat triangle that sky watchers call the teaspoon. This little spoon has a handle that's marked by 2 dim stars a little to the upper left. Now, why should you care about this celestial teapot and teaspoon? Well, take a moment to stare at the spot to their left, a little patch of celestial real estate that lacks any bright stars. Although it's completely invisible to our eyes, Pluto is right there, some 3.1 billion miles away. Wow. One more thing. Remember when I mentioned spotting Jupiter and Saturn before dawn? Well, here's the deal. You don't have to rise that early to see them. Toward the end of July, look along the eastern horizon, over to the left of Sagittarius, around 10 o'clock or later. You'll see first Saturn, and a bit later Jupiter, sneaking into view. The big fat moon is parked right between them on the night of the 25th. By next month, both of these giant planets will rise around sunset and be in the sky all night long. That's about it for this month. If you want more tips for viewing the night sky, check out Sky at a Glance on our website, skyandtelescope.org. It offers great star and planet gazing activities on a day-by-day basis. And if you haven't already subscribed, you can find this Sky Tour on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you listen. And please leave a rating or review. I'd love to have other stargazers find this show. And if you want to explore the solar system and universe more deeply, please do check out the full line of binoculars and telescopes available at Celestron.com. Sky Tour is a production of Sky and Telescope, a division of the American Astronomical Society, and is produced by me, Kelly Beatty. Join me next month when I'll tell you what that teapot in Sagittarius has to do with the center of our galaxy. Until then, I wish you clear skies.